We're going to continue to move on. We're going to go up to number 17. If Mr. Jake Davis is ready, we'll have an aquatic invasive species end-of-year report. And I know Jake was joining us virtually this morning. There he is. Good morning, Jake. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and begin.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Jake Davis, I'm a Fisheries Program Administrator, and I will be providing a update on the 2023 Aquatic Invasive Species Program. Hopefully you can see my screen.
Yes.
Excellent. Now, I will admit this presentation is actually different than the one I had prepared yesterday, and that is the nature of the beast with the AIS program. It is constantly evolving. So these numbers that I'm going to share today are as present as possible. However, there is the possibility of change moving forward here. But again, this is as close as we can get for a lot of our summary statistics. For example, a lot of our efforts have ended for the year. But what we'll be covering today will be our AIS outreach and education. This is our primary tool when we talk about the AIS program here in South Dakota. We want to provide the users of South Dakota surface waters with the tools that they need to implement best management practices every time they use a surface water of the state. Additionally, we want to cover our partnerships. This is a statewide program with a lot of moving parts, and we would not be able to accomplish what we do without partnerships, and I want to make sure that we acknowledge those. Additionally, we have concluded our watercraft inspection program for the year. I want to include those numbers and provide that update to the commission. I certainly have given a number of updates over the year, the field season, as far as what our numbers are, but these are going to be complete numbers. Additionally, I want to talk about our detection and monitoring efforts that were conducted by not only our agency, but also our partners. Cover some invasive carp work that's been conducted with the department and also some of our partners. This is something that I haven't discussed with the commission in previous presentations, so I want to make sure that I cover it here. And then just kind of wrap things up. So the first effort I want to talk about is our outreach and education. We have a communication staff that does an excellent job working with us. We also partner with an advertising firm out of Sioux Falls. But again, we look at outreach and education as our primary tool at slowing the spread of AIS into and within South Dakota. And again, that primary reason is we can't be everywhere all the time. So we try and provide those users with the information they need to implement best management practices. And the key is every time they use a water body. So this isn't all the efforts that we do, but I did want to just highlight some of those. So far this year, we've sent over 2 million emails to users with AIS content. Now, these emails can have content that varies throughout the year. We target users at specific times. For example, as we get close to holiday weekends, for example, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Memorial Day, we want to send out specific messaging. Additionally, for the first time this year, we had an AIS Awareness Week in May, which led up to Memorial Day. So within that week, we sent specific content to users basically every day leading up to that busy weekend. Additionally, as some of our partnerships, we again used 43 gas station TVs across the state. The idea being that when a user is filling up with gas prior to using a water body, they encounter this gas station TV, encounter AIS content, and hopefully it's fresh on their mind as they go to a water body. Additionally, we use social media. This year, we reached over 340,000 individuals using our social media campaign. And then additionally, we have a lot of opportunities with our outdoor campuses on both sides of the state to reach people in person. And so during 96 classes this year that our outdoor campus staff led, they introduced AIS education into those classes. So again, another way that we can reach users when we're interacting with them. I also mentioned the partnerships that we have, large programs, statewide, basically year-round, and so with that, we do rely on partnerships to help us spread the word, help us fund our program, spread the message, and that can include federal, state, NGOs, the whole slew of it. So I do want to mention the partnerships we had with our federal agencies, for example, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, a lot of funding that funds some of our inspection, as well as our research comes from the Fish and Wildlife Service. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as far as placing signage on properties that are managed by that entity. Bureau of Reclamation, whether that's funding in the past or permission to conduct activities on, again, waters that they manage. And then the U.S. Forest Service. And similar, again, out west, this is where a lot of activities happen on U.S. Forest Service-operated properties. So we want to make sure that we're working closely with those organizations so that we can implement the program. Additionally, we work with other state agencies. Department of Transportation has been instrumental in helping us place signage, helping us with spreading the word on interstate travel, for example, using their large billboards, but again, using the areas that they manage to help us spread the message. Department of Public Safety and also Department of Revenue have been excellent partners as far as looking at state agencies. West Dakota Water Development District is a partner out west. They provide funding to help with watercraft inspections in Pennington County. They've done this for several years, and again, a great organization to work with. And then some of our NGOs, Invasive Species Action Network, they help spread the message at just different ways on Don't Let It Loose as a campaign as far as releasing pets and things like that. And then lake associations. This is a big effort that we have in eastern South Dakota. Annually, we reach out to over 30 lake associations, and we work with a number of those. This picture here is actually a partnership with the Lake Ponset Lake Association to put these signs up around that water body. Now, to jump right into our watercraft inspection and decontamination, our WID program. This program operates during the primary boating season, which for us starts in May and ends in October. And that's what our program ran this year. Additionally, it's primarily staffed with intern and seasonal staff for GFP. Additionally, we partner with our local county conservation districts in western South Dakota for watercraft inspectors on those western reservoirs. This year in 2023, we had just over 18,600 inspections. This is our highest number of inspections to date. Within those inspections, we had 198 watercraft that were deemed necessary for a decontamination. Now, what this can mean, though, is it's not necessarily what we would consider a full decontamination where you might picture a zebra mussel attached. It may be as simple as a vegetation removal. There may be a piece of vegetation attached to a trailer that would be a form of decontamination. Additionally, very fortunate to have the support from law enforcement that we do. They're present at a lot of these watercraft inspections. And through those efforts this year, there were 136 citations issued, as well as 147 warnings. Now, one of our success measures that we look at on an annual basis, looking during our watercraft inspections, are the boat plug compliance. So this is a regulation that requires that all plugs in a boat are removed, not only the drain plug, but also live wells, that sort of thing. This year, on a statewide basis, we saw a plug compliance rate of 98%. This was up from last year where we saw a statewide compliance of 96%. So hopefully this means that our message is being received by the users and they're implementing those best management practices to help clean, drain, dry is the message that we try and reiterate as much as possible. Nick mentioned that yesterday, and clean, drain, dry, that is our message that we're going to hammer on over and over again. Just to do a little bit further breakdown of our WID program, we've got the different locations that we had. So for example, in eastern South Dakota and central South Dakota as well, we have roadside inspections, and the reason that we do that versus access base, which would be at a boat ramp, for example, the roadside, we do those in areas where we have a high number of access points, and it really doesn't make sense for us logistically to try and cover all those access points. So we try to set up on major thoroughfares to catch a majority of watercraft moving in between. And so instead of saying just sitting at one boat ramp, by setting up on a highway, we may be able to cover multiple water bodies. So we do this in eastern and central South Dakota. In western South Dakota, where we have fewer water bodies and fewer access points, we do access-based sitting at boat ramps, for example, or in specific areas, for folks that are familiar with Belle Fourche Reservoir, for example, has multiple boat ramps, but if we set up at the main primary entry road, we can cover all those boat ramps with one location. So we do access-based in western South Dakota, and then we had a roving access-based crew in eastern South Dakota this year that would target multiple water bodies, and their schedule varied throughout basically anything in northeastern and southeastern South Dakota. So I have the inspection numbers broken down by office or location. 2023 is on the left, 2022 on the right. The big take home here, though, is that in some cases you'll see we had more inspections at a location in 23 than 22. In other cases, we had fewer. And what this indicates to us is the effort may not have changed as far as the number of days that our staff were out there, but user patterns change. They can be driven by both the weather, but also, say, fishing conditions. A hot bite might push users to a certain area. But when we look at certain water bodies, and I'll say this for Pactola as an example, we were down in inspections from 2023 to 2022. Now, our effort was the same as far as the number of days, basically, that we were out there and the staff at both boat ramps. However, what we saw was that we had cool weather in the Black Hills. For folks that remember what the 4th of July looked like in the Black Hills, it was a cool, wet day. Well, that does impact our overall numbers. So again, just showing here that there is some variability from year to year within a location, and it can be driven by environmental conditions as well as, say, a fishing bite. Want to cover some of our detection and monitoring efforts that were conducted this field season. The first one would be efforts that were conducted by our fisheries crews. Great job by our fisheries crews. I want to thank them. What they did was conduct AIS surveys in along with their standard lake surveys. So when a crew goes out to run a standard netting survey on a water body, they would also conduct an AIS survey. So this would consist of either shoreline inspections, so walking, looking at rocks, vegetation along shorelines or any structures, as well as throwing, say, a vegetation rake where they're looking for all forms of AIS, not necessarily just mussels. So this year our staff surveyed 87 water bodies across the state, which is a great effort. We also work with 12 lake associations. What we do here is distribute settler samplers where folks can attach these to a dock, a boat lift, something like that, and then periodically throughout the year, simply lift that up and look for any attachment of a mussel. Helps with our outreach and education, helps with our monitoring efforts. For example, if our staff weren't going to a certain water body that year for a lake survey, but we had a lake association participating, we still have monitoring or detection efforts happening. So we did have a number that partnered with us on that, and they are able to provide us with that information. A big thing that happened this fall is infrastructure inspection, and this happens every fall, but there's a lot of infrastructure, docks, and fishing piers that are in throughout the field season and then removed in the fall. Well, this is an opportunity for us to inspect these structures as well as private individuals when they come out for winter storage. And in all honesty, this is a time that we do find a lot of mussel infestations or confirmations just because as that infrastructure comes out, it gives us the opportunity to look at something that's been underwater all year. And so we had that going on statewide. Our park staff did a great job. I want to make sure to thank them for all the efforts that they have done, as well as our fishery staff and then members of the public that reached out to us when they pulled their infrastructure. Now for 2023 new mussel confirmations, we are at 6. We had the Sand Lake Refuge in the James River earlier in the summer. We also had Roy Lake, Big Sioux River downstream of Lake Kampeska. Lake Kampeska has been confirmed for zebra mussel for several years. Also Big Stone Lake, and then Lake Oahe was confirmed yesterday. So that is our newest confirmation. Staff was out again inspecting infrastructure that had been removed along Lake Oahe and found zebra mussels attached at Cow Creek and also East Shore Corbay. So that is our new mussel confirmation is Lake Oahe. Want to just briefly cover our invasive carp work that happens in southeast South Dakota. That was discussed briefly yesterday. We've also had a presentation from one of our biologists in the past of this commission on the work that's happened, but I did want to just cover this. We're completing our third year of work with research projects in cooperation with South Dakota State University and the University of South Dakota. Just some work that just to highlight some of the topics that are being looked at. Movement of silver carp within the James River. Also natal origins, so we're trying to determine where these fish are being reproduced, where they're hatching, what areas of these rivers are important to them, and then also assessing any invasion risks. So we know where they're at now, but what are the potential pathways for them to move to other areas where they are not currently found within South Dakota? With that, I just kind of like to wrap things up and then certainly take any questions, but summary for this year, the big thing, again, is outreach and education. We really rely on our users to help us implement clean, drain, dry every time they use the surface water of South Dakota. As I mentioned before, we can't be everywhere all the time, so we try and reach those users and provide the tools that they need to implement those best management practices. This year, as far as inspections go, 18,642. That is our highest number to date as far as our WID program. Continued partnerships. We wouldn't be able to do the things that we do if it wasn't through partnerships with federal agencies, other state agencies, general public, NGOs. Again, they're all part of our AIS program here in South Dakota. We did see that increase from 96 to 98% bolt plug compliance on a statewide level through those WIT inspections. And then where we're sitting right now, again, 6 water bodies confirmed for zebra mussel, new confirmations in 2023. I always like to end with this message that we keep pushing over and over, clean, drain, dry. But I also want to mention, it's not just our message. If you look at neighboring states, clean, drain, dry is going to be that standard message that we try and get across to the user. And the reason for that is it's not specific just to mussels. This works for all AIS. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Jake. Any questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, thank you, Jake. On Lake Wahi particularly, I believe that like Fort Peck, the northern end of the Missouri, had already been infested. Is that correct? So this was something that was just, you know, coming from our northern states, that this was just going to happen. I mean, we were expecting those villagers to make their way down eventually. So this may not have been a South Dakota fisherman, so to say, that was the source of this one, but actually just the source of the water likely was a potential source for this one.
Through the chair?
Yes, please.
To my knowledge, I don't believe Fort Peck has zebra mussels. So I will confirm that for you, but again, to my knowledge, I don't believe that zebra mussels are present in that water body, Commissioner Whitmire.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yeah, so maybe I'm confident that I was told that, but not by staff. I mean, in another conversation in another group. But so, yeah, I apologize if I misspoke. Do you know if anything north of the South Dakota border was infested with zebra mussels in Missouri?
Through the chair?
Yes, please.
I believe that Lake Sharp was the furthest upstream that zebra mussels are present in the Missouri River system.
Very good. Any other questions for Jake? Jake, I'm going to go back. Secretary Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jake, quick question in regards to zebra mussel movement upstream. What have we seen in Lake Sharp with the movement of zebra mussels from West Bend up into Pier? Where did we find the zebra mussels in Lake Oahe, and what do we expect for movement northward?
Through the chair?
Yes.
Yes, Secretary Roebling. So when we look at movement patterns, it's generally going to be a downstream dispersal. Essentially, when they reproduce, they have free-floating villagers that are just simply in the system floating around, and so the movement happens either with wind-driven or, in this case, current. And so where we had them in say, Lake Sharp, it was a slower move up, but it wasn't necessary. It was more likely user-driven. Now, in this case here, the initial detections were in Lower Oahe at Cow Creek and Core Bay. And so what we would expect as far as movement upstream, if you will, likely going to be user-driven just because that current and that natural dispersion is going to be downstream.
Jake, just a quick follow-up. How many years went by when, in order for us to see zebra mussels, let's say Farm Island and north in Oahe downstream from West Bend?
Through chair?
Yes.
Yes, Secretary Roebling. I probably couldn't tell you an exact time frame as far as a year or two or months, but for example, so Lake Sharp was first deemed confirmed in 2019. And then I guess anecdotal reports moving forward is a year or two before they maybe made it closer to the dam, if you will. But there's certainly going to be some potential lag time, if you will, for move forward. But at any time, whether it's, say a user-driven movement, that new location could happen really at any time. It only takes one. So essentially any movement of water could be that vector. And so with that, it's hard to say what the time frame might be because, again, it would only take one instance, for example.
Any follow-up, Secretary? Jake, I want to come back. In terms of compliance, we're doing very well. We went from 96% compliance rate to 98% compliance rate. Can you remind me, if someone is cited because they are not in compliance, what do those citations look like? What is the cost of, what are the consequences?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I hope I'm getting this right. I believe it's a Class 2 misdemeanor. It's $182 approximately, and if they're caught a second time or found in violation a second time within a year, it goes to a Class 1 misdemeanor, and then that's certainly a higher fine that's associated with it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments for Jake? Very good. Thank you, Jake, and your flexibility this morning with the presentation. We appreciate it.
Thank you.